Welcome, everybody. This is Derek Bodner along with Rich Hoffman. We have Rich back this week. Like I said last week, we've had some trouble getting our schedules to align, but here we are, and what perfect timing because the Sixers just ended their 0-17 start to the season with a win.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, and it's great. Like, winning that game was great. Getting that off our back was great. Hopefully, the national media not paying attention to us anymore is great. Man, that was an ugly game. If you had to rate, like, the Sixers' 10 best-played games of the season, that wouldn't even come close to making the list for me.
Just estimating it, I guessed it was somewhere like 13 or 14, which tells you the sorry state of the Minnesota Timberwolves, right?
Yeah, you take out, you know, those five or so games where they just got blown off the court.
But, like, if they played Dallas last night on the road,
they lose by 20.
More, probably. They were so bad, Minnesota.
I mean, Minnesota's a bad team anyway, but you take away guys like Ricky Rubio. You have Zach LaVine running the point, and that's
Pekovic too, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a team that can't play defense and now is turning the ball over and not getting good half court looks. It's
so much Mo Williams too. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's brutal. He's so bad.
We'll take it. We're now only what is it? Two games behind the Knicks in a loss column. One game behind the Pistons in a loss column. Who they have coming up?
That's so funny.
Which is hysterical because, I mean, you had Van Gundy, who last year at the Sloan talking about how the Sixers should be embarrassed, and here he is 3-16 on the season, with actual NBA players too. And granted, they don't fit at all, but you've got actual NBA talent on this team, which the Sixers can't really say. But they have them coming in, and not that I'm concerned about the Sixers passing any of those teams, because this is a team that should be 0-18 right now, and it's really the worst offensive team I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But there's a lot of really bad teams, and it's just amazing that they're not pulling away from the Sixers like that. And to be fair, the Sixers, they have had probably a fairly tough schedule to start the season, but
they have. They're done with the Texas team, so that's something at least.
Yeah. And again, to be clear, this is not. Nobody is concerned if they're winning too many games. This team, I would be very surprised if they don't.
No, root for wins, everybody. Seriously.
Yeah. Because I'm legitimately worried about that worst record, that 9-73 popping up.
You should be. I laughed a lot last night, just seeing how the national point of view turned from, now that the Sixers had won a game, it turned from that to, oh my God, the Knicks and the Pistons, they're terrible.
It's like everybody forgot how terrible they were until they stopped focusing on us.
Once everybody has won in the win column, then you start realizing the teams that were trying to win and are terrible. So that was funny. Yeah, last night, more than anything, I was just happy that the national media stopped talking about us. Like, the fact that ESPN had like a reporter there. Did you see, last night I was looking, it said it was on their main page for the Sixers win, the teaser was Jubilant Noel, and the video, it was an interview with Nerlens, and it was this woman who was like, she was like goading him and like, how great does this feel? And he was like, yeah, he's like, Nerlens was like, yeah, it feels pretty good. You know, I'm happy we won a game. But they were pretending like he was like ready to throw a party or whatever.
Yeah. And every chance Brett gets, he talks about, you know, we're paying no attention to it. And of course that's bunk. Like you're a human being. You can't have, you know, the media. I don't think there's more than 10 people who go to every home game. There was 25 plus people at the last home game. They're not there because they're playing well or because they like them as players or people. They're there because they're setting a record, and it's impossible, you know, for them not to notice that somewhat. But do I think that they automatically now feel great about themselves and it validates everything that they've done? And, you know, that report was ridiculous.
They're happy to get off the schneid. I mean, they're happy. Don't get me wrong, but like, people were pretending like they were like the fans who were like, we were all ready to throw, you know, everybody else was so excited just that they had won. It is funny too how they get really close to setting these ignominious records. I don't know how you say that.
Amazing. It's amazing.
And they get right to the edge and they just don't quite do it.
Now,
and
granted, they did tie last year. So they're kind of in the record books. But you're right. I mean, nobody was expecting, and granted, we probably should have expected them to beat the Pistons last year, because the Pistons were A, awful, and B, legitimately tanking, because of, I think their draft pick was top 8 protected. So them coming up flat was no surprise, and we probably, I mean, when you lose 26 in a row, though, you don't really expect that the 27th is going to be a win. No. But they did kind of get in the record books, but you're right, they've been so awful for, you know, I mean, they were bad to start last season, but for a year and a half now, they've been just awful, awful, awful. And for them to avoid the record books, it's kind of amazing.
This one was a little different, too, because remember last year, like, they were still losing games pretty handily, and then they just destroyed Detroit because Detroit was just a mess. They were, I would argue that they might be a worse team this year, but they were knocking on the door a little bit recently.
Oh, yeah.
You could tell that they were at least getting, they were at least putting themselves in position to sort of get lucky and win one. And,
yeah. No, it's kind of amazing how that stretch, you know, that Toronto, Dallas, San Antonio stretch where they couldn't compete. They weren't even close to competing. But
it's been a lot better recently.
It's been and even before that, it was a lot better. There's really just that week and a half where, like, they combination of running into just teams that they don't match up with at all. And teams like the Mavericks, they don't turn the ball over. Toronto doesn't turn the ball over. And when they don't turn the ball over, the Sixers can't do, you know, jack shit in the half court.
Oh, my God, they can't.
But if you take those out, I really don't think, you know, it's, I mean, they were 0-17. It wasn't good. But I don't think it's as, I think that drove the narrative quite a bit.
It did. I feel happy for all those guys that they got to win, you know, and Brett Brown. But, yeah, they had been playing better recently, and that was good, you know.
And I guess moving on, you know, I don't want to spend an hour talking about a game that, quite frankly, was.
One more thing. How dumb is Flip Saunders for trading that pick? The fact that he thought he could compete in the West. Now, obviously, they have a lot of injuries to key guys, but the fact that he thought Thaddeus Young, 1 year of him, and God bless Dad, by the way, I feel bad for him that he's almost in a worse situation now. The fact that he thought, oh, this guy is going to help us compete for the eighth seed in the Western Conference. Man, that is...
No, I mean, if that's actually his reasoning behind it, then you're right. He has no business running an NBA franchise. I'm hoping he believes, and he's been given strong indication, that Thaddeus Young will re-up there. And I don't know why he would if his main objection to being here was that he was, you know, not playing on a competitive team. But I hope that he strongly believes that he can retain Thaddeus Young, and that's why he made that trade. Because otherwise, giving up a year for Thaddeus, or a mid-first round pick for a year of Thaddeus Young is absolutely insane.
But, like, I think he might be able to re-sign Thaddeus Young, but it's going to cost. And, like, as much as I love Thad, you don't want to pay that guy a ton of money if you're in Minnesota's situation. No, at least I wouldn't.
I mean, the only saving grace is, you know, the national TV money and it going up like that. But you're right. The only way that you keep Thad with a team that bad is by drastically overpaying him. And at that point, you gave up, you know, a mid-first-round pick to drastically overpay a solid player.
And I know I personally am rooting for him to get the hell out of there after this year because I want to see him play for a good team as somebody who you know, gave the Sixers pretty much all he had for 7 years. So I'm thoroughly rooting him for him to bolt there or for them to somehow acquire some great player to pair next to him because, I mean, him last night, I just felt bad for him.
Yeah.
Just watching Mo Williams jack up threes. All right, yep. That's enough. Enough of that game.
Okay, so moving on. You know, obviously there's a lot of players on the roster who, to be nice, don't really matter. We're not going to be sitting here in 3 years talking about Jakar Sampson or Drew Gordon or even Robert Covington. We all care Bob. About... He is turning into our big shot Bob, but...
No, he should seriously play like 25 to 30 every night.
I mean, no, I'd be cool with some consistent playing time. Just to see. And, you know, and frankly, he just makes the games more enjoyable to watch. And I know Brett Brown's on a defense kick right now, and Covington can't really... He doesn't move his feet all that well. And a lot of people want him playing at the three, and he can't.
But he seems like he can make threes once in a while. And that's good
and
enough
man,
for me.
Man, is it nice. I'll take a mediocre to slightly bad defense if I can at least get an enjoyable offense to watch right now.
Oh, me too.
But that's more just a personal, you know, personal, I have to sit through these games and God damn it, I want it to be somewhat enjoyable. But going to MCW, Nerlens Noel, they're certainly the two biggest. You could put KJ McDaniels in that group now.
For sure.
general thoughts on them, how they've played, and it's very early, especially for these guys like Nerlens and MCW who are coming off of injuries. But general thoughts on them and how they've played.
It's interesting. There's a lot of talk about nationally and even locally too about how playing on such a bad team affects the young players that the Sixers hope to build with development. Their potential building blocks, how playing just with such bad players affects their development. And it's interesting. I've always said, I don't know. It might be bad. I'm not trying to dismiss that. It might hurt them. Right now, I think the guy it's hurting the most is MCW. The fact that he's got to play with, right, let's go through the starting lineup. Hollis Thompson, who, to be kind, has been terrible. Like, just not good enough. I think there's a chance he's still an NBA player, but not one that's a starting shooting guard. So that's one. He plays with Luke, Richard, and Bahamute, who has driven at least 30 people on my Twitter timeline to have an aneurysm this year. It's just brutal. Nerlens Noel, who obviously we all have pretty high hopes for, but is extremely raw and has no business being as big of a part offensively this year and that as he is on this offense. And Henry Simms. I don't know what point guard would generally succeed with that group. And the fact that MCW is averaging 5 turnovers a game, in some ways I think that's lower than I would expect. Like, this is not last year when, for a long time, he played with Spencer Hawes and Thaddeus Young as his front court. And even Evan Turner. I mean, those guys are NBA players, and they're solid NBA players, for what you have to say. So the fact that he's struggling from the floor, or that his floor game, he's struggling to manufacture offense for these guys, I don't blame him at all for that. The thing I'm really worried about, though, and we talked about this a little earlier, is his jumper looks just so bad. It looks, he was a historically bad jump shooter last year. He won Rookie of the Year. I thought he deserved to win Rookie of the Year. But he was historically terrible from behind the arc. And he somehow got worse over the summer. Now, it might be the injury. It might be that he's still rusty. I don't know. But, it's not encouraging, right?
No, it's, I mean, you're right. It's been very, very bad. And, this is something where we talked about, he's rebuilding it. He spent all off season, despite his shoulder injury, rebuilding it. Maybe his shoulder injury helped contribute to his, because, he said he's been playing through that for a long time. Maybe that contributed to it, but you're right. I think he looks worse so far this year. And again, it's very, very early in the season. He really just started playing. He really came back. But, I mean, that was the one area where he could legitimately work. You can't play at game speed when you're not practicing with the team.
You can cheat, though.
And I think that, if you want to say his conditioning is off or his timing is off with his teammates, all valid arguments contributing to his turnovers. And you're right, he's at something like 4.3 turnovers per game and only 31 minutes. And it's been, that's been a huge problem. But man, I mean, people talk about the last three games where he's averaging a triple-double, and it's great. He's averaging, something like 21 points, 10 rebounds, almost 11 assists. He's averaging 5 turnovers, and he's shooting 22% from three-point range. And I mean, this is not, it's not like he's just not translating it to the games either, because you go to practice, him and Tony Roten tend to shoot a lot together in drills. And you'll just see them go have, they'll shoot 5 and 5, and you'll see the two of them combine to go 2 for 10. And, this is completely uncontested in practice. A lot of what we talked about in terms of his form, his guide hand, his footwork, they don't look much improved. His touch isn't there. And you're talking about a kid who's now 23. And, he missed some time in the offseason because he couldn't work on it. He's now playing with guys who, a lot of them have no business being, I don't want to say on an NBA roster, even though some of them don't.
Some of them don't. Yeah.
But no business playing significant minutes on an NBA in an NBA game, and it's extremely hard to rate him because of that. And I've mentioned that, and that's my one real criticism of this rebuild and of this plan that they've taken. I'm not sure how much you can really change that without making significant long-term salary offers to guys who you might not end up wanting in a couple of years. So I'm not sure there's a great way to fix that. But it is the one side effect that I really don't like right now. And to combine that, the one thing that you hopefully can see improvement on in this year, you're not seeing improvement on yet. And again, hopefully, you know, January, February, March, you start seeing some improvement. But man, he's fun to watch. He puts up great numbers. He's certainly exceeded everybody's expectations. But if he doesn't fix that, and I'm not talking a slight fix, a slight improvement, but it's really hard to see him being, you know, a second, third, fourth option on a winning team, in my opinion.
Definitely. It's funny, the critique too, wouldn't you say it's more of a self-evaluation thing? It's that we don't know that he's good. See, I get bothered when someone says they ruined him.
Right.
Like, he couldn't shoot before he got here.
No.
Like, and the fact that he was rookie of the year last year.
29% from three from the college three-point line in his second season at Syracuse.
And, yeah, he was the rookie of the year last year. But we can all say that he might not have been the rookie of the year last year if he was anywhere else. He played well, and this rookie class stunk. And he looks like he looked like he was a better player than where he was picked. But, like, you can't say that he was, like, on the track to stardom or anything after last year. We still had no idea if he could shoot. And, obviously, this goes back to something I wrote a year and a half ago about that being his swing skill. Like,
yep.
I don't understand on a good team, if he doesn't drastically improve his shot, how he fits. Like, once you get in the playoffs and your point guard is a 25% shooter from three, it's over. I don't care if they have Joel Embiid. Like,
it changes,
triple the shit out of him and make him shoot. Like,
yep, it changes everything you do offensively. Everything.
Yeah. So, and to be fair, I do want to be fair to him. He is, I can't emphasize enough how hard it has to be to try and manufacture offense with this group. Like, Hinkie has put him in just an impossible situation for the current time. But, yeah, it's the shot is, I don't think the shot is as much of a factor of who he's playing with. And it looks terrible. Like, you're right, even like the guide hand and like, even past that stuff is the mechanics, the guide hand, the follow-through. He's, like, bricking the hell out of these shots. Like, they have no shot off his hands.
No, I mean,
last year he'd throw up the occasional air ball, and when I say occasional, like, a decent amount, he'd throw up the air ball. But the rest of the time, you'd see back rims or front rims. You'd see a lot more of those. This year, you see a lot of, like, oh, my God, that ball, like, is that even going to hit the rim? Like, it's just tough.
Yeah. And, I mean, you go before a game and watch him shoot at practice. And just the rotation on the ball. Even if you don't look at the guide hand, don't look at the footwork, don't look at the follow-through, you can just tell by the rotation of the ball that there's no consistency there. And you watch somebody like, you know,
his
like Jason Richardson.
Too.
Right, right.
Like, oh, my God. Last night, he almost lost in the game because...
Yeah, two in a row. No, and that's... I mean, you look at, you know, all these problems that we talk about, the shooting... The turnovers, the inefficiency finishing at the rim, and a lot of those, especially the inefficiency and the turnovers, you can put on his teammates, on his role.
Yeah.
And you could do that last year, but now you're going at the problem where, I mean, by next season he's going to be a 24-year-old that's played three seasons of meaningful basketball, one at Syracuse, because his freshman season he barely played, but one at Syracuse, two in the NBA. And you look back at his Syracuse numbers, 12 points, 5 rebounds, 7.3 assists, great numbers. But then 39% from the field, 29% from the college three-point line, and 3.5 turnovers per game. And you just have a pattern where it's hard to ignore. But you almost have to ignore it because of the situation. So it's I'd really love to see him surrounded by guys who can make his job easier, who can limit what he does, and see if these turnovers and this inefficiency is something that he can correct. And it's going to be hard to see that this year.
Well, yeah, and just for the organization's sake, they need to see him with some semblance of an NBA team before they have to make a monetary decision on him.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what they think about him. You know, I think there were a lot of rumors last year that they wanted to trade him and sell high on him. But I think that's going to be harder to do now, frankly, unless he turns around his shot and starts playing a little bit better.
Yep. And even for, I mean, you know, they talked about him putting on 15 pounds of muscle. He's still struggling to finish when contested at the rim. He's shooting a little better. He's shooting 57% within 3 feet. But, I mean, Kyle Korver is shooting 57% from three-point range. 57% is not a great number when you're that close to the rim. And if you break that down, take out the transition buckets, it's you know, he still struggles to finish at the hoop. And that's, you know, that was something that you hope that, and again, it's really early. So it's just another continuing struggle that you hope eventually.
Yeah, for sure. On the other hand, so I do think the lack of talent is hurting, or is potentially not helping MCW's development, not hurting, but it's hard to get a read on him. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people bring up this dearth of talent is hurting Nerlens Noel. I actually could see this working out another way. Now, he hasn't been great, but I kind of like the fact that they've completely thrown him to the wolves and said, okay, we're going to pair you with Henry Sims. So you literally have no help defensively. And offensively, let's be honest, you don't really have a lot of help either. Go show us what you have. And the fact that he's been able to hold his own, I'm slightly encouraged by that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he needs playing time. He needs to be out there and as many experiences as possible. I don't think his offensive game is really dependent upon who is helping him. I think, you know, he's going to struggle at times. No matter, he could be playing for Dallas and he's going to struggle offensively. So give him touches, give him looks that, you know, let's face it, on pretty much any other team, you're not dumping the ball in Nerlens Noel. You're not setting him up for a baseline jump shot. You're not letting him ISO 17 feet from the basket.
He's getting dump offs and putbacks. That's his offense.
That's his offense. You're right. And it's good to, not so much for evaluation, because we know he's going to struggle at times with that, but just to get experience, to get, you know, to get different game situations, different defenses, see how they react and try to adjust.
And the fact that, like, he is at such a physical and strength disadvantage every night, the fact that he has to play through that, I like that. I think,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be really ugly sometimes. Like, he throws, like, the ugliest hook shot up in the history of the world the other night. But they dumped it right back down to him in a couple possessions later, and he made the shot. I think, yeah, like, he's really learning on the job this year. Like, more than anything, with his skills, which he is working on, I think he's sort of, like, learning mentally how to become an NBA player and, like, what he needs to do in the offseason, which, you know, mainly what he needs to do in the offseason is, like, live in the weight room. Because you see, like, last night, for example, he got set up to do one of those running hooks, which, like, you know, even though they're ugly, he does make some of them, and he makes them at a higher clip than I actually thought coming in. He just gets pushed off his spot so easily.
Yeah.
He's coming up for a hook shot, the guy bodies him up and he goes flying backwards. So he does need to mature his body. He needs to work on it. But I've been impressed with him. Like, he's honestly not a very good player right now, and I don't know many rookies that would be. But I've been impressed with how he's competed, especially, like, with Dwight Howard earlier this year. And, I mean, I think we all have a better idea of what his weaknesses are, mainly catching the basketball and rebounding. And he's going to have to work on those things.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously he's been up and down quite a bit. I think maybe we had a little bit of unrealistic expectations, maybe not really even expectations, maybe hopes, that a guy that we had spent a year waiting for would be a little further along than we've really had a right to believe he would be. But I think he's been the player that you kind of expect. He's been that, you know, he's among the league leaders in altering shots at the basket. Great at that. He forces steals. And offensively, while we've talked about some of the ugly hooks, some of the rawness, we all expected that. So I think he's largely been a player that we expected, both good and bad. And it's like you said, just even beyond the jump shot, and I think the jump shot's important, and I think you're seeing some ability to hit that occasionally.
I've been encouraged by it. Like, it, again, it's really mechanical, yeah, and ugly.
I'm not sure I'd ever teach someone to shoot like that, but that's I think a lot of that played into what he's comfortable doing, and they just tried to make it consistent more so than pretty.
Well, can we say, like, last year, right, he was really working on his hand placement more than anything, yeah. Right? Like, he was working on where his elbow was and getting that under the ball. And the problem with his shot, mostly, is that it's sort of his legs and his hips aren't in sync. But I do like that the rotation he's getting on the ball, and he is shooting it straight yeah. every time. So I do, when people are sort of laughing at what did he work on last year, I actually do think he made quite an improvement from college when you're
yeah.
watching.
Yeah, I mean, really, with college, the only thing you have to go on are free throws, because he legitimately didn't take one jump shot the entire season at Kentucky, which I find amazing for anybody in today's game of basketball. But yeah, no, judging by his free throws, and I mean, he's not shooting well in the season, but there's some hope there, which is all you can really ask for. And I might have some concerns about, you know, his fit with Noel, and especially if they get a top three pick and they go with either Okafor or Towns. Although, to be honest, I don't think having three big men is the worst thing in the world.
I don't.
Not with injuries, not with, I mean, there's 96 minutes to go between two spots. So maybe he's not starting. He could still play 25 to 30 minutes a night.
Well, and then you make, you have to, you lower what you need from him too. If, right. if you do that, if you you're more realistic about him and you don't think his offense will ever, develop to the point where he'll be a starter. If he's your first big off the bench, I mean, not a lot of bigs can do what he does defensively.
No, and if you have a guy coming off your bench who can change a game defensively, then it doesn't sound like a worse problem in the world to have. It's just whether or not, you know, another team might value him more, and you could get a king's ransom for him.
Sure.
Which, you know, who knows? But
this summer, I would tell him just get in the gym, like seriously, like in the weight room. That's your big problem right now, and obviously work on your skills and everything. But his body won't once he. He can is not at like a huge physical disadvantage every night, then I think we could really start to see some stuff.
Yep, definitely. All right, I guess going down the totem pole, KJ McDaniels, who, you know, I think when we talked over the offseason, we certainly loved the pick of KJ McDaniels, but I don't think any of us really expected, you know, what he's doing so far.
He looks ridiculous.
He does. He legitimately outplayed Andrew Wiggins, the number one pick last night.
He did that while not shooting well either, too, which is crazy because, I mean, obviously you've talked about his shooting is probably bound to regress a little bit, but it's unbelievable how much it looks like he belongs, like, in high-level games.
He's averaging 2.1 blocks per 36 minutes from the wing. From the wing. That's insane.
That's interesting. Do you think that's a little bit of a result of how bad their transition defense is? Like what, does anybody have more opportunities for chase down blocks than
yeah.
him?
I mean, it's not like he's not getting them in the half court though, too.
No, the Toronto one sticks out to me, but yeah, he is wow.
Yeah,
he's something.
Yep.
Good job. By him betting on himself too.
Yeah, no, I mean it would have been great to have gotten him. You know, what if Sam comes out and he's like, here's a $3 million per year deal for, you know, 3 or 4 years or whatever. Like even that to me would have been preferable than going into next offseason.
I'm not sure he knew how good he was.
Well, if anybody knew this was going to happen, he wouldn't have gone 32nd overall.
No. Did you see the other night, too, when they were playing the Spurs and Kyle Anderson, who was everybody's sort of
and he's been awful this year.
Yeah,
and again, early disclaimer. It's really early in the season, but he's not doing anything.
But if San Antonio can redo that pick, not even a thought, and he might actually be playing like heavy minutes for them right now with their injuries. So, it's crazy.
What would have been really great, and this is again venturing into the what ifs, but if maybe they had found a way to trade into move up from 32 to like 28 or 29.
That's interesting.
And lock him in on that first round contract. That would have been, but
we're going to, don't you think there's a chance we might start seeing some rules change because of this, or at least some trends like what you said? Like I totally agree with that. A team should definitely want to be get that last first round pick, especially in the Sixer spot.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand too, wouldn't that be mutually beneficial to some of these teams? Like the Spurs have a loaded roster. Wouldn't a second round contract that you can part ways with faster? Like that seems like that would be a mutually beneficial move, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it'll be interesting. These borderline first round guys who have a high degree of confidence in themselves, and frankly, all professional basketball players do. So you really have to be able to self-evaluate. But if agents for guys that are projected in like 26, 27, 28, if they start forcing, you know, I'm not going to work out for these teams or try to force their players to fall down in the second round so they can. And I mean, everything went right for KJ in this situation, right?
Yeah.
The Sixers have a ton of minutes to give him, more than he wouldn't be playing. I don't know what he's playing, 25, 26 minutes a night right now.
No, he'd be playing less for most good teams. Much
right,
less.
And you need a team that, you know, that has cap space and a little more flexibility in what they can do. And you're not just going to get that 2-year contract. But you just wonder if KJ is almost going to be a word of caution to some of these players that are getting locked into first round contracts that, quite frankly, aren't beneficial for them at all.
Yeah, you're right too about the perfect situation. Like, because here's the dirty little secret about KJ McDaniels: as well as he's playing, he can't dribble.
Nope.
This is unbelievable how well he gets the basket.
Yeah, I mean he's very quick, and if you keep him on a straight line, he can usually get there.
If you make if you make him do one move, it's over.
Nope.
He cannot do it. Like, you saw last night, Corey Brewer harassed him for like 5 seconds and he threw the ball right away to, I think it was Mo Williams or somebody. Like, man, like, if you make him do something, he can't do it. That said, like, dribbling is something that obviously can improve. Like, what could this guy be if he figures that out?
No, and I mean, he's finished well around the hoop. He's shooting 36% from 3-point range and
looking good for the most part doing it.
Yeah,
too.
Like, with the exception of last night was probably the first hurdle. It wasn't just that he was 0-for-4, but man, he missed some bad too.
He missed enough for a whole season. The distance he was missing him by.
Yeah, but I mean, he's and even on the glass, you know, he's rebounding. You know, I think he was averaging something like 9 rebounds per game over the last 4, which he wasn't doing at all in the beginning of the season.
Those putbacks are unbelievable too. Like he'll have two a game where he'll try and put back
he has no chance of doing it. Nope.
And the fact that he even gets that close is like, wow.
Yeah. No, I mean there was one, I forget which game it was. It was a game where I think he had like 9 offensive rebounds. 4 of them came off of one possession where he just kept going back and back and back. And his second jump is so much quicker than everybody else that they just had no chance.
You know what that sort of reminded me of? Evan Turner had a play like that his rookie year. I distinctly remember this. I don't know why. I guess.
Yeah, but was he going back up or was he getting it stuffed in his face?
It was something like that. Like, I think he got one up on the rim and then I think he got one swatted and it was like a great play. Like, it was against Golden State his rookie year and he just kept like working really hard for it and the place went crazy. But like the qualitative difference between what McDaniels did and that, from what I remember, is like, it's like insane. Like McDaniels is above the rim and he's just missing and Turner's like struggling really hard and he's pump faking and all this stuff. This guy is this guy looks like he's going to be a keeper. And I do think it's a little too early to say, oh man, hey, everybody who made fun of second round picks, look at this. You know, he's the first pick in the second round. You get that right from being really bad. He's more or less a first round pick.
No, he was. He's not something that Hinkie got by trading away Evan Turner.
No. That said, it's a great pick. I
mean, yeah. No, I mean, honestly, if you do a redraft now, I can't see much of a way where he doesn't at least go in the lottery. At least.
I think that's conservative, too.
I was going to say top 10, but, you know, there are still a lot of guys who aren't playing well who have the potential where they may have been taken. But, I mean, you look at KJ, all he has to do to be a 10-year starter in this league is play defense and make 3-point shots. Like, that's all he has. He doesn't have to. It's not like, you know, Andrew Wiggins where you're going one overall and you're going, man, he really needs to improve that handle. Like, if he doesn't do that, then you just spent a number one pick on a role player. You're talking about getting a role player And all he has to do is become a little bit more consistent in his jump shot, which he's already done, but you just have to see it over a longer sample size.
But he's shown, from what he's shown, he gives you a lot of hope that it really can improve and become more consistent. And that's, he's been basically an A+. I mean, besides his crying and his mom.
Yeah. He finally got his mom off of Twitter too, which is good.
I mean, it shows that he can improve in everything, basically. He could show improvement in all areas, but no, I mean, that guy's been just an A+. And you know, as bad as this season has been, can you imagine how much worse it is if it was a guy who couldn't play they took in that spot?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Like, he is, for a couple games there, he was easily their best player.
Yeah. He absolutely has been. Up until, you know, last couple days with Michael and that stretch with Tony and you know, Tony, he came out shooting like 40% from 3-point range to start the season. And I think since then he's been in the low 20s, so he's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. But he's probably been their most consistent player, which is amazing for a second round pick.
Yeah, he was funny. I watched him a little bit at Clemson, obviously. I'm sure you did too. Just because when I was keeping an eye on Jabari, it seemed like they played a lot. And maybe like I was watching PJ Hairston match up with him. He was really impressive last year. I have to be honest. It's something about the NBA game. Like, I had no idea he was this explosive. Like, yeah. I knew he was a really, really good athlete. I knew he blocked a million shots. But, like, I thought, like, just watching him guard Jabari, and by the way, guard Jabari really well in the ACC last year, it just seemed to me like he was doing it with a lot with positioning and length and very good athleticism. Like, his athleticism is off the charts. I can't believe how good this guy is. And
yeah, and you know what? He didn't measure out all that great at the combine,
which is crazy.
Yeah, I know. He had a 33-inch no-step vertical.
That's
insane. And a 37-inch max vertical. Right, and there's no way, like,
he's one of the 10 best leapers in the league. He has to be.
I know. I don't understand how that happened, but that's why when you look at these combine results.
You think he was tanging it to try and get out of the first round because he knew he was going to get a contract like he is.
I think he's pretty bitter about not being in the first round. But that's why you have to take these combine results, and we all obsess over them because, you know, in May, what else are we going to obsess over? But you have to take that into context. Like, there are just some people. Like, Dwayne Wade did not have a great combine. I think he was in the low 30s again as well in vertical. And that's just insane. Like, you watch these guys play, and there's no way that that's representative of their athleticism. And KJ was one of those guys too.
Yeah, he's really good. Early thoughts. I know it's early. Early thoughts on how this contract is going to play out. Just generally.
Well, I mean, first year limited to 5'4". Second year, I think, is 5'7".
Gilbert Arenas rule, right?
Right.
And also,
and he's fully restricted this offseason. Even if he takes the qualifying offer, which is either $1 or $1.2 million. Even if he takes that, he's restricted next year.
Cool.
So they should have leverage over him, but, you know, this is a guy who's probably right now in the top three in Rookie of the Year.
Definitely.
He almost has to be. And if this continues,
if they start winning some games, too, like, and get out of, like, worst team ever discussion, like, that's going to skyrocket, I imagine.
I mean, if this guy makes the All-Rookie team as, you know, what is he, 21, I think he'll be 22 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And as a, when do you see a guy who could be a starter for 10 years hit the open market at 22 years old?
The only one I remember sort of just offhand in the last 10 years. Do you remember Wesley Matthews?
Sure.
Like, he was a second round pick, right?
Yeah.
And he started on a playoff team that was a little different. He was like a fifth starter on a playoff team, but you could tell he was going to be really good. And he got paid. So you don't really see this that much. Somebody brought up that Carl Landry did this too in Houston. Is that correct?
I don't recall. Was he a second?
Yeah, he was a second rounder, and I think somebody said that he at least did something similar to KJ. I think he did, and then the Rockets signed him.
What? Wesley Matthews, second year, $5.765 million, 6'1", 6'5", 6'8".
you know, to be honest, a lot of people are worried about that. If KJ earns that type of contract, you know, with the type of money these guys, with the amount of cap space the Sixers have, that'd be fine.
Yeah, and Wesley made that after averaging 9.4 points as a 23-year-old. I think you could be looking at 7 or 8 million over 3 or 4 years for KJ. I don't think that's. I mean, and obviously we talked about the being limited. I'm talking average annual value.
Yeah.
I don't think that's out of the question, and I think I'd probably pay that. And I think that the increase in the national TV deal
that helps too.
Makes that, you know, because you're talking about 5.4 or 5.7, then big jumps to like $10 million, and that national TV helps make that a little more palatable.
It just
you can't let a 22-year-old who we talk a lot about fit for role players. He fits with pretty much any system you're trying to run.
Any systems. Slow, fast, like defensive minded, offensive minded, whatever.
Right. Dump it to the big man. You still need a guy in the corner to shoot.
He's
driving kick point guards. Like it doesn't matter what you're trying to do.
And it's like, it's funny. It's like when I get mad when somebody says he's a hinky type of player when I think that's just total bullshit. Like, what does that mean? But I don't think Sam Hinkie, like most general managers, is in the business of letting a talent like this go when they make a fine. Like, I don't. It's too early to sort of obsess over this, but yeah, like I would sort of tell fans, let's take a chill for a little bit here.
I think
don't
people,
worry too much about it.
I think people are too convinced that they know what Sam Hinkie wants.
Yeah.
And I think what you know is what Sam Hinkie wants at this very specific stage of their rebuild. I think the Sam Hinkie player or the Sixers won't spend money because they're, you know, $30 million under the cap or whatever argument you have. That's how they operate in this very specific stage of the rebuild. And I think when we start progressing past that, I think we should take these assumptions, just kind of table them just a little bit, because I think he might surprise you.
Oh my God, I have no idea what he's going to do this offseason. Like, the fact that people think that they know what's going to happen, like, I'm prepared for pretty much anything. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm prepared for pretty much anything besides, like signing Evan Turner or something like that. Right. That would floor me.
Legitimately, the only player who I would be stunned if they lose is Joel Embiid. The only player. I could see scenarios where any other player moves. I could see, you know, big signings. I could see him going for Jimmy Butler. I could see him trading Michael Carter-Williams and Nerlens and getting another player. I could see anything happening except for Joel Embiid leaving.
Yeah. What else you want? I think we've talked enough about KJ. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Good job, Sam.
I guess we got Furkan and Aldemir.
Oh, yeah, he's coming in.
Coming over. They won't go on the record on when they expect it to happen or even if they expect it to happen, but it's happening. I think a lot of people are probably have their hopes a little too high for Furkan Aldemir.
See, I don't think they do. I just think they're excited to see not Henry Sims for 35 minutes a night. Maybe take that down a little bit and Brandon Davies.
Sure, but I think there's an excitement that you know, could lead to a little disappointment when they realize what he is. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I think Furkan can play. I think with Furkan, you might have a 10 to 15 minute per game role player. And I think if you keep your expectations of that, I think you'll be fine.
But, right, like a 10 to 15 minute role player on a real team is, I mean, that's a 30 minute starter for this squad. Like, that's, like, this team is, the front court is just, whew, man. Yeah, no.
You really don't like your Henry Sims, do you?
I hate it, man. I just, it's tough to watch Henry Sims just because, like, he's actually done pretty well offensively this year. I'll give him credit for that. But it's just so hard to watch. For such a big guy, I've never seen him, like, be in proper box out position ever. Like, he's always behind the offensive player. I don't get it. Yeah. You're huge. Like, that should be the one thing you're good at is blocking out, but. Whatever. Enough with me ripping Henry Sims. He's trying hard.
He definitely does try hard. And he has made improvement offensively.
No, he's
he definitely
he's
has.
Probably like their, what do you think, second, third best offensive player? I mean, that's fair to say. Like, he's not bad. He can shoot a little bit.
Yeah, no, he definitely can. And it's to the point where I'm not so much worried about sample size. I think I've seen enough where he might go down a little bit, but he's definitely making progress in his jump shot and very real progress. But you're right. His rebounding's got to be more consistent, defending the pick and roll. There's certainly a lot.
He's never going to be good at that. I mean,
no, he's not. And I think he could become a better rebounder, but
yeah.
Defending the pick and roll is always going to be an Achilles heel for him.
He's our technical free throw shooter, by the way.
I know. And that's not even like that was with Michael Carter Williams on the court and with, you know, other legitimate players. That wasn't with Brandon Davies and Jakarr Sampson. And
oh, just think about it. I mean, Covington is the only other guy. I don't even know what he shoots, but he's the only guy I would think about putting ahead of Sims. He just seems, man, their free throw shooting is rough. That is, above all the other things that are really frustrating to watch, can we just make 70% of our free throws? And the answer is no. But, yeah, so that stinks. All right, you want to rank the...
Rank the assets. One of the questions I got asked today, and it's something that even if we're not, it's something that we're pretty much always thinking about. Who are we actually building around? Who's kind of just here? I think we would probably both agree that Joel Embiid is the top asset the Sixers have right now.
Far and away.
Far and away. And to me, I think the second best asset is that 2015 pick.
I would say, yeah. I would say that's definitely the second best. I mean, you're looking right now at Okafor, Towns, Moutier.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of the fourth guys are playing better too. So we'll see.
Yep. And
I really like Justice Winslow, by the way. I don't know
he's been incredible. And I'm not sure, you know, if we get number, he's probably number four right now for me.
We'll see where he falls and how this progresses. But yeah, he's been nice. I like him. Reminds me of KJ a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yep. I saw somebody compare him to Harden the other day, and I almost lost my mind.
Well, he's left-handed. That's the only thing I can think of. But,
right, and it seems like if you're left-handed, you get compared to another left-handed player.
Left-handed, but he did a Eurostep once.
But with how well he's played defensively.
Oh, it's a terrible comparison. Because he's not even close to Harden offensively, but he's shown so much more on the other end of the floor. It's brutal. I mean, I guess he is... They both have cool hair too, you know. But besides that, I don't really see it.
Yeah, no, me neither.
So yeah, that one is. I think that's definitely second. The top of this draft looks pretty good. I mean, it's funny. Somebody brought this up last night. Would you agree with this? There was a lot of hype last year for the top of the draft, and it seemed like sort of to the crazy expectations, they were sort of underwhelming. This year, these guys have sort of in the top slots. Sort of, they're a little more unknown, right? And
yep.
A lot of people are starting to take notice. Wow, these guys are pretty good. They look like they're legitimate. This looks like this is going to be a legitimately pretty good draft.
No, I mean, right now, you know, I think Okafor has played just so incredibly well offensively that he has to kind of grab your attention. And what I like about both Okafor and Towns, really, you know, people a lot of times say, can two big men work? But when you have someone with the passing instincts and ability of Okafor, and what Embiid showed last year, if they can both pass that well, then I think you can make the two of them work. Okafor has been tremendous passing the ball.
No, he really has. And Towns has shown in smaller spurts that he can really pass it too.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting. Just like a little bit of a snap judgment, and I'm so flexible on this because, like I told you, I mean, I've barely seen two games of these guys. It does seem like even though Okafor has definitely played better than Towns, just because he's featured more and he's handled so much more responsibility so well. I mean, last night, the fact they beat Wisconsin on the road last night, that's really impressive. That Wisconsin team is really...
That's a potential Final Four team. It really is.
Oh, I still think they're going to make the Final Four. With all those seniors, and Kaminsky's really good. And the fact that they were able to win there was really impressive. So, yeah, I would say... Even though Okafor has played a little better, Towns screams to me as, wow, this could actually work with Embiid.
Oh, yeah. Towns, certainly defensively, I think one legit concern I have with Okafor is, you know, defending the pick and roll, defending more perimeter-oriented bigs. I'm not sure Towns is necessarily great in that regard. He's not Nerlens moving his feet on the perimeter, but he's better than Okafor. I mean, you look at some of the numbers right now that Towns is putting up, And if you ignore the minutes played, he's putting up video game stats. I mean, we're talking 8 points, 7.4 rebounds, and 3 blocks in only 18 minutes played. 3 blocks in 18 minutes. That's absurd.
I got to say, this Kentucky thing is amazing. I think it's great.
Oh, they're incredible. They're incredible.
I think it's so unique. And, like, obviously, like, what are we looking for in sports more than anything is to be entertained. The fact that he's going to try and do this the whole year, I love it. And if it makes it a little bit harder to evaluate talents, we're going to still see him play plenty. So, it's been great. He's been really, really impressive. That team is like, I do think what got lost in that Kentucky Sixers argument is just that Kentucky Kansas game. I've never seen a college team look so impressive before.
No, because that was a very good, it wasn't just a very good team, but, you know, that was a Kansas team that has some legit frontline talent, too. And they just destroyed them. I mean, they it wasn't even close. This is as deep of a college team, particularly one without experience. I can't imagine if we were still in an era where you could watch this team grow together for 2 to 3 years. Like, this would be really something to watch. But, yeah. I mean, their frontline depth is absurd.
No, it's really good. I've really enjoyed them. And obviously, yeah, I just think talent's just the fact that he seems like he's going to get to play on the perimeter a little more because he's matched with Cauley Stein. And he seems to be a little more athletic than Okafor, even though he's not as refined on the post. I do see that is sort of more of a natural fit with Embiid. They could sort of switch a little better defensively. Yeah. But that'll be something that we can monitor the whole year. I'm certainly willing to change my opinion or strengthen it on that. It looks like it'll be fun.
And if you look at someone like Towns, I mean, let's just assume, I haven't been able to watch much of Mudiay yet, but let's just assume if Towns really is number three on draft night, if he is, you know, if he is your if things go wrong plan, then that's, I mean, he has just a world of potential. And it's not like potential where, you know, maybe he'll develop. He's already a good player. So for him to have that much more potential, I mean, Sixers are going to be in a very good spot to get a very good player. Maybe not one who necessarily fits the area of need, because there really just aren't that top flight shooting guard or small forward talent. But I'm not passing on a guy like Okafor or Towns just because, you know, we drafted Nerlens Noel 2 years
ago. No, not at all. Can you imagine the uproar that's going to happen nationally when they do draft Okafor first or whatever?
Oh yeah, and they have their fourth big men in two years.
It'll
whatever.
Be crazy. All right, so well, I guess so. Getting years. Back on topic, because the top three looks good. Obviously, you mentioned Mudiay; he's playing well in China. He's been hurt for a little bit, but it seems like he's acquitting himself very well over there. So that's second. That is definitely the behind Embiid. So what would you have third among their current assets?
You know, I think Nerlens is the best prospect of that group, and he's probably who I would rank third. I wrote about this earlier today, and I snuck Saric in there, and I'm going back on that already. And I mentioned in there that I'm going back and forth, but Nerlens is just so unique defensively that I can't, even if his fit with Okafor, and potentially with Okafor and Towns or Okafor and I'm sorry. Even if his fit with Embiid, and potentially Embiid and Towns and Embiid and Okafor, isn't all that great, it would take quite a bit for me. Because, like you mentioned, even if he's just playing off the bench and playing 25 to 30 minutes, he can change a game defensively.
That might end up being the ideal scenario anyway.
Yeah, and for how unique he is defensively, how he can, you know, switch on pick and rolls and block shots and... He's just he's going to be a very good asset.
No, I mean if he can have like a Taj Gibson type asset impact, that would be great. I mean, obviously I'm not trying to put any pressure on him, and he'll obviously be a different player than that. But like, yeah, you need a solid front court to win. I would also rank him third for that reason. Yeah.
And not only solid front court, but I just really value those weak shot blockers. And he looks like he could be as good as pretty much anyone in the league.
For sure. He definitely has that down pat. All right, so...
I mean, can you imagine... sorry to go back to this. Can you imagine having Embiid, Towns, and and Nerlens. I mean, that shot blocking would be ridiculous.
Yeah, it would be like that what Utah tried to do a couple years ago, like just on steroids and after a couple eight balls, and like it would just be on such a different level. It would be crazy.
And you know, two of those prospects have legitimate offensive potential too. And it's not like they're just shot blockers. Like Embiid and Towns are legitimate number one or number two offensive.
Oh, I can't wait to watch Towns play offense the rest of the year. That's gonna be excellent. I would rank Nerlens third. See, now this is where it gets interesting. KJ has moved himself into the conversation here.
He has, and the question I answered today, for some reason they didn't ask about KJ, so I skipped him. But you have Michael, who won Rookie of the Year, and you know put up all those stats and you know showed so much, at least in terms of potential. And then you have Saric, who, much to most of Sixers fans' chagrin, has not played at all and won't play for quite some time. And then you have KJ coming in from the second round. So this is to me where it gets really fascinating.
And I mean, obviously we haven't mentioned this yet, but some of the biggest news this week. Dario Saric, youngest EuroLeague player of the month ever.
Yep. About four months younger, I think.
This is a guy who wasn't playing that much last month at this point, and people were wondering. Yep. And he went to the youngest European player of the month ever. It's funny. Yeah. I was watching a little bit of his game before we started talking. He was struggling with this shot today. But he is playing a ton, like, for them. Like, I remember watching a game earlier in the year where – you know, he would get 3 minutes at a time and then get yanked. While he was struggling with his shot today, it seems like he's got the full confidence of that coach. And as I mentioned on Twitter, by the way, also, the team they played against today featured both James Anderson, he was their leading scorer, and Darius Sungaila. That was a blast from the past, let me tell you. And also, too, that team, it was the worst game I've ever seen for a while.
James Anderson, he's kind of a thing over there, isn't he?
He's playing well for this team. Somehow his team is above average. Saric's team at one point was winning 18-2, like late in the first quarter. It's really hard to watch. But so Saric is definitely, he's not hurting his stock by any means.
And I think it's really going to be interesting, and people ask all the time whether he's going to actually come over after 2 years, and I know he said he did at the draft, and if he comes over, I don't think it's going to be a financial reason at all. It's going to be he wants to play in the NBA. Because to me, if he can stay over there 3 years, his contract with FS is probably already going to be more than his rookie scale contract anyway. But if he stays over there for 3 years, avoids rookie scale. And, you know, the rookie scale contracts, they're set until the CBA expires. So even if the national TV deal money comes in and increases your mid-level, increases your max contract.
That's interesting.
That rookie scale is set. So, you know, what we look at now as what would be a good contract for Saric in 3 years, right. So if to me it makes sense, financial sense, for him to stay over there 3 years, avoid the rookie scale and come over when the national TV deal has hit. But, you know, he swore that he was coming over in 2 years, that he wanted to come over. So it'll be really interesting whether if he stays at 3 years, people are going to go insane.
But if he kills it for 3 years, you know, maybe people will be happier
and
about
I mean,
that.
The longer he plays and the longer he plays well, the more it seems likely to me that he'll stay that extra year so he can have a little bit more freedom to negotiate.
I think that's definitely true. Here's the thing.
But you want him to play well, so it's kind of a catch-22.
And I would also opine that he is going to play well. He's 20 years old. If there's injury, like, he's not regressing it. Like, he's only getting better. Like, because that's the thing, too. This is not like a guy playing against in college. Like, because he's 20 years old, he'd be an upperclassman in college where, like, he really can't dominate to any, like, a higher level. This is like a rookie playing in sort of a watered-down NBA. And he's just going to get better against these guys. Because he's playing against grown men right now, and he's doing really well. So, let's go real quick. How would you rank those last three things, I guess? I think, personally, I think I would go KJ first.
You know, I was just thinking this. It really depends if you're picking for maximum potential upside or if you're picking if you had to like assign an expected value to each prospect.
Yeah.
If I'm going expected value, I think KJ might be number four on the list, just because, like I said, there's no way, if his shot is even remotely consistent, that I don't see him starting for quite a long time. His defense, his athleticism is that good. And I think there's quite a bit more potential, like you said, if he does refine that handle. You know, I think Michael, he certainly accomplished the most in the league, but I have serious...
I would rank him third.
Serious? Of the group? It's possible. I mean, I think it's just tough because he's accomplished so much individually. But I have serious questions about his ability if he doesn't improve that jump shot. And I have serious questions about his ability to improve that jump shot. But I have serious questions if he doesn't improve that jump shot, how much overall he's going to contribute to teams. And specifically a team built around Joel Embiid and potentially built around Joel Embiid and Okafor or Joel Embiid and Towns. I have serious questions on his ability to fit.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So yeah, I think KJ I might value at this point more than Michael. And I think Saric, you know, if we talk about MCW's fit being in question, I think Saric is the exact opposite. Because, you know, he's not shooting the ball all that well from three-point range still, but I think his with his last game notwithstanding, because I haven't watched it yet, I think his mid-range shot has looked pretty good. And if you look at a guy with his passing ability, if he can have people defending him, we all hate the mid-range shot. But I think where you lose that a little bit, where it's not as bad, is on guys who can pass. Because if your guy's defending you 17 feet from the basket, there's just a lot of room for cutters. You can post him up, and while he's probably not going to be a huge post-up option in the NBA, he can hit cutters diving to the basket. I think he's going to be very interesting to put next to Embiid or Okafor or Embiid in Towns.
I think you changed my mind already. I think I'd slot Saric ahead of KJ now. That's very true. And the fact that it looks like this is going to be a team that sort of plays inside out if everything goes right, and with the way this draft is could shake out, I mean, at least it's too early to say that. But you're right. Like, he is such an amazing passer, but he's not like an amazing playmaker off the dribble. But the good news about that is that you don't have to be when you play with Joel Embiid and potentially another good pick. Passing is the most important part of that.
Even if, let's say, they get Towns and Joel Embiid develops like we think we do, and Saric is such an amazing passer, you're still going to want somebody on the perimeter who can create off the dribble. So you're right. I don't think you want to ask him to create for others off the dribble as much as you just want to run cutters off of them and movement and things of that sort. And I think having a bunch of big men who can pass, I think it really does. The most wasted skill in the world to me is a big man who can force a double team but can't pass his way out of it.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that Sarge's major weakness is his defense and sort of what position he defends. And if you have, if they got Towns and Embiid, you could basically hide him whenever you wanted. He would have probably the best protection he could, and he could have that at all times. He could have it with two different guys. So
no, you can, and especially
yeah, it's
when
interesting
you're
if they decide to go big. Oh, good.
Oh no, go ahead.
No, it's just if they decide to go big, it does really seem to mesh with his skill set really well.
Yep. No, if they go. And at that point, you do get to the point where having four big men, there might be a little too much overlap there. But he can play with Embiid. He can play with Noel right now. He can play with Towns, and he can give you a good dynamic with all of them. I do think you want to avoid putting him at small forward. I don't see him being able to defend there. And at that point, it's not just dribble penetration, which hopefully Embiid and Noel can make up for, but it's guys losing him off of screens, losing him off of pick and rolls, and losing him off on the perimeter. But yeah, I mean, he's going to have a ton of success through the next 2 years, playing in that league. The only way you might see a regression is if somehow he ended up in like the ACB or in Greece or something like that. But he's not changing leagues; he's under contract. So
and he's played well against those teams this year too. Like when he's, I mean, obviously he doesn't play them. You know, he only gets them in the EuroLeague. But yeah, for sure. All right.
Certainly, with the way he's playing and with the way the draft has looked this year, and I mean, it's not like Towns and Okafor were unknown guys who came out of nowhere, but to me, they've looked really good, and that gives me a lot of hope for, you know, next June.
Yeah, it definitely, things are looking up as far as that draft goes, and it does seem like there's a lot of guys, like, you know, I don't know what that, and obviously the last asset the Sixers currently have is that Miami pick. That would be the last one, which isn't, that we talked about earlier, which is a nice thing to have that they got from Minnesota. But, yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of guys, you know, sort of in between where the Sixers' first pick will land and where that Miami pick falls, that are interesting if they do decide to leave.
Yep. No, and I think a lot of people said, you know, we don't need to tank this year because the top of the draft are big men and, you know, there's no clear-cut top players. And I'm not sure I see that anymore. I really want one of those top two or three picks because I mostly because Okafor and Towns have impressed me quite a bit.
But stockpile the talent.
We have plenty of time to talk about that. And unfortunately, with the way the team, you know, it could be a little ways now before we see our second win. So we'll probably talk about more than we really
got. Detroit on Saturday. Got a shot.
We do have Detroit on Saturday. That's a definite win. Not a definite one, that's a definite chance. Detroit is a bad
That should team. Be a thing. We should call it a definite chance.
Yeah, definite chance. They have a 100% chance of having a chance
they
in
do.
That game.
I agree.
All right, sounds good. I think we've certainly talked enough about mostly, tried to avoid talking about the irrelevant players, but certainly talked enough about a 1-17 team. Do this again soon. It was fun. Thanks for hopping on. And
cool, man.
See you soon.
Thanks for having me.